Oh, God. I'm so sorry.
Steht auch ohne Tracht, Tracht und Tracht der ganze Nacht, Wärmen zu nehmen und nicht verschämen, Nehmen zu nehmen nicht verschämen. Tumbala, 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 laika. Tumbala, 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 laika. Tumbala, laika, spiel.
Roy is completely still, his eyes closed. He's not breathing. Ethel watches him, then, quietly.
Roy? Are you?
She crosses to the bed, looks at him, goes back to her chair.
That's it!
Belize enters, goes to the bed.
Wake up, it's time to take your... Oh. Oh, you're...
No, I'm not! I fooled you, Ethel. I knew who you were all along. I can't believe you fell for that moss stuff. I just wanted to see if I could finally make Ethel Rosenberg sing. I win!
Something very bad happens in his head. He's thrown a pulmonary clot, and it strikes his brain, and he falls back on the bed.
Oh, fuck! Oh, fuck me! Next time around, I don't want to be a man. I want to be an octopus. Remember that. Okay? A fucking... Hold!
Act 5. Heaven, I'm in Heaven. January 1986. Scene 1. Very late, same night. Pryor has been moved to a proper hospital room. He's standing on his bed, a pillow covering his crotch. There's an eerie light on him. Hannah is sleeping in a chair, a flimsy hospital blanket covering her lap and legs. She stirs, moans a little, wakes up suddenly, sees Pryor.
She's approaching.
What are you... She is?
Modesty forbids me explaining exactly how I know, but... I have an infallible barometer of her proximity. And it's rising.
Oh.
The lights drain to black.
Turn the lights back on. Turn the lights back on!
All over the walls, Hebrew letters appear. Writhing in flames. The scene is lit by their light. The angel is there, suddenly. She's dressed in black and looks terrifying. Hannah buries her face in her hands.
Oh, oh, oh!
I have returned, prophet, and not according to plan. Take it back! The book! Whatever you left in me, I won't be its repository! I reject it! Ah! Help me out here! Help me!
Closing her eyes tight, trying to shut it all out.
I don't...
Pulling the blanket over her head.
This is a dream. It's a dream.
I don't think that's really the point, right, of this particular...
I don't know what...
Well, it was your idea. Reject the vision, you said.
Yes, but I thought it was more metaphorical.
You said scriptural precedent. You said...
Pryor tries to yank the blanket away from Hannah, who hangs on to it.
Well, what am I supposed to do?
You wrestle her.
Say what?
It's an angel. You just grab hold and say, oh, what was it? Wait. Oh, grab her. Say, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me.
And then what?
Then wrestle with her till she gives in.
You wrestle her! I don't know how to wrestle!
Pryor faces the angel, who's been waiting for him, blazing with menace. She opens her arms, challenging, terrifying. Pryor draws as deep a breath as he can. Then, to his and her and Hannah's surprise, he charges at the angel. He throws his arms around her waist. She emits a terrible, impossibly loud, shuddering eagle screech.
I will not let thee go except thou bless me!
She tries to pry him off, but he hangs on. Pryor and the angel begin to wrestle. It's a life and death struggle, fierce, violent, and deadly serious. The angel at first is far stronger and has a clear upper hand, but she cannot pry Pryor loose.
Take back your book! Anti-migration, that's so feeble! I can't believe you couldn't do better than that!
Pryor's tenacity begins to tire and panic her. She screeches again, then unable to shake him off, she opens her wings wide and begins to beat them, battering Pryor. He loses his grip for an instant. She rises immediately into the air. Pryor leaps up, grabs her right leg, and pulls down with all his might and weight. She beats her wings more furiously, rising higher, lifting him up off the ground, but he won't let go.
Free me! Unfetter me! Bless me or whatever, but I will be let go!
The angel is straining heavenward but can't ascend higher. Pryor's weight causes her to lose altitude.
I am the Continental Principality of America! I am the bird of prey. I will not be compelled.
They descend. Pryor's feet touch earth first, and he redoubles his grasp, first on her leg and then her torso, wrapping himself tightly around her. Helpless, she stretches her wings to their utmost, screams the eagle screech again, and stops fighting. The fiery letters fade, and the room is sunk in blue murk. From above, a column of incredibly bright white light stabs through the blue. Within the column of light, a ladder of even brighter, purer light appears, reaching up into infinity. At the conjunctions of each rung, there are flaming aleph's.
Entrance has been gained. Return the text to heaven.
Can I come back? I don't want to go unless I...
You have prevailed, prophet. You choose. Now, release me. I have torn a muscle in my thigh.
Oh, big deal. My leg's been hurting for months.
He releases the angel. He hesitates. He looks at Hannah, asking her, should I go? Frightened as she is, she manages to hold her hand out, bidding him to stay. Pryor, suddenly very sad, shakes his head no and turns to the ladder. After one last look at the angel, he puts his hands on the rungs, then one foot, then the other, and begins climbing. The column of bright light intensifies as he ascends, till Pryor and the ladder are entirely subsumed within its blinding radiance and can no longer be seen. Then abruptly the column of light disappears, and the room is drowned in semi-darkness. The ladder and prior are gone. The angel turns to Hannah.
What? What? You got no business with me. I didn't call you. You're his fever dream, not mine. And he's gone now, and you should go too. I am waking up right now.
Nothing happens. The angel spreads her wings. The room becomes red hot. The angel extends her hands towards Hannah. Hannah walks toward her, torn between immense, unfamiliar desire and fear. Hannah kneels. The angel kisses her on the forehead and then the lips. A long, hot kiss.
The body is the garden of the soul.
Hannah has an enormous orgasm as the angel flies away. Scene 2. Prior Walter is in heaven. He wears new prophet robes, red, dark brown, and white stripes, reminiscent of Charlton Heston's Moses parting the Red Sea drag in the Ten Commandments. Beneath the robe, Prior's wearing his flimsy white hospital gown. He's carrying the book of the anti-migratory epistle. Heaven looks like San Francisco after the great quake. Deserted streets, beautiful buildings and ruins, toppled telegraph poles, downed electrical cables, rubble strewn everywhere. On a nearby street corner, Harper sits on a wooden crate, holding and petting a cat.
Oh. 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 Oh.
Oh. Oh.
Oh, it's you! My imaginary friend!
Are you dead?
Where are we?
Heaven!
Heaven? I'm in heaven? But I'm not dead. I just had sex. And then he had to go. I drank an enormous glass of water with two Valiums. Or six. Maybe I overdosed, like Marilyn Monroe.
Oh.
Did you die?
Oh, no, I'm here on business. I can return to the world if I want to.
And do you?
I don't know.
I know. Heaven is depressing. Oh. It's full of dead people and all, but life, ugh.
Ugh. To face loss with grace is key, I think, but it's impossible. All you ever do is lose and lose.
But not letting go deforms you so.
The world's too hard. Stay here with me.
I can't. I feel like shit, but I've never felt more alive. I finally figured out the secret of all that Mormon energy. It's devastation. That's what makes people migrate, build things. Devastated people do it. people who have lost love. Because I don't think God loves his people any better than Joe loved me. The string was cut and off they went, ravaged, heartbroken, and free. I have to go home now. I hope you come back. Look at this place. Can you imagine spending eternity here?
It's supposed to look like San Francisco.
Ugh.
Oh no, but the real San Francisco on Earth is unspeakably beautiful.
Unspeakable beauty. That's something I would like to see.
Harper and Sheba vanish.
Goodbye.
The angel is standing there.
Greetings, Prophet. We have been waiting for you.
Scene 3. 2 a.m. Same night as scene 1. Roy's hospital room. Roy's body is on the bed. Ethel is sitting in a chair. Belize enters, then calls off in a whisper.
Hurry.
Lewis enters, wearing an overcoat and dark sunglasses, carrying an empty knapsack.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's too weird for words. It's Roy Cohn. It's so creepy here. I hate hospitals.
Stop whining. We have to move fast. I'm supposed to call the duty nurse if his condition changes, and it's changed. Take off those glasses. You look ridiculous.
Lewis takes off the glasses. He has a black eye with a nasty-looking cut above it.
What happened to you?
Belize touches the swelling near Lewis's eye.
Ow! Ow!
Shh, shh.
Expiation for my sins. What am I doing here?
Belize takes the knapsack from Lewis.
Expiation for your sins. I can't take the stuff out myself. I have to tell them he's dead and fill out all the forms, and I don't want them confiscating the medicine. I needed a pack mule, so I called you.
Why me? You hate me.
I needed a Jew. You were the first who came to mind.
What do you mean you needed a...
Belize has opened Roy's refrigerator and begins putting all the bottles of AZT into the knapsack.
We're going to thank him for the pills.
Thank him?
What'd you call the Jewish prayer for the dead?
The Kaddish?
That's the one. Hit it.
Well, hold on.
Do it. They'll be in here to check and he's not...
Belize has filled the knapsack and closed the empty refrigerator.
I am not. Fuck, for him? No fucking way. Oof. The drugs? Okay, sure, fine, whatever. But no fucking way am I praying for him. My New Deal pinko parents in Schenectady would never forgive me. They're already so disappointed. He's a fag. He's an office temp. And now look, he's saying Kaddish for Roy Cohn. I can't believe that you would actually pray
Lewis,
for him.
I'd even pray for you. He was a terrible person. He died a hard death, so maybe a queen can forgive her vanquished foe. It isn't easy. It doesn't count if it's easy. It's the hardest thing. Forgiveness. Which is maybe where love and justice finally meet. Peace, at least. Isn't that what the Kaddish asks for?
Oh, it's Hebrew or Aramaic or something. Who knows what it's asking?
Lewis and Belize look at each other, and then Lewis looks at Roy, staring at him unflinchingly for the first time.
I'm 32 years old, and I've never seen a dead body before. It's...
Lewis touches Roy's forehead.
It's so heavy and small. I know probably less of the Kaddish than you do, Belize. I'm an intensely secular Jew. I didn't even bar mitzvah.
Do the best you can.
Lewis hesitates, then puts a Kleenex on his head.
Yiskadalva, yiskadashame, rabashame, tikudasho. Bore pri hagafin. Do not get this. That's the Kiddush. That's not the... There's a whole...
Shema Yisrael Adonai. Oh, God, this is silly, Belize. I can't.
Balma divra chirusei viamlich malhusei.
Balma divra chirusei viamlich malhusei.
Bachayachon uva yomechon uva chaye de holbeis Yisroel.
Bachayachon uva yomechon uva chaye de holbeis Yisroel.
Bagala uvisman koriv.
Vimru omein.
Yehe shme rabba mevurach. Lolam ome olmaya.
Yisborach v'yishtabach v'yispoar v'yisrumam v'yisnase. Veis hadar, veis halev, veis halol, shmei
dekudasho berichu. Leila minkol biahosa vesherosa tushbahosa.
Benehimosa damiron balma vimru omein.
Yeheshlama rabba min shmaya vahayim uleinu vialkol Yisroel vimru omein. Oshe shalom bimromov. Hu yase shalom olenu vialkol Yisroel.
Ose shalom bimromov. Hu yase shalom olenu vialkol Yisroel.
Vimru omein.
Vimru omein.
You son of a bitch.
You son of a bitch.
Ethel vanishes. Belize hands Louis the knapsack.
Thank you, Louis. You did fine.
Fine? What are you talking about? Fine. That was fucking miraculous.
Scene 4. 2 a.m. Joe enters the empty Brooklyn apartment.
I'm back. Harper? Harper?
Roy enters from the bedroom, dressed in a fabulous floor-length black velvet robe de chambre. Joe starts with terror, turns away, then looks again. Roy is still there. Joe's terrified. Roy does not move.
What are you doing here?
Dead, Joe. Doesn't matter.
No, no, you're not here.
Joe closes his eyes, willing Roy away. He opens his eyes. Roy is still there.
You lied to me. You said cancer. You said...
You could have read it in the papers. AIDS. I didn't want you to get the wrong impression. You feel bad that you beat somebody.
I want you to...
He deserved it.
No, he didn't.
Everybody does. Everybody could use a good beating.
No, no, that's... I want you to go, Roy. You're really frightening me. Get out. You don't belong here. He didn't deserve what I did to him. I hurt him, Roy. I made him bleed. He won't ever see me again. Oh, no. Oh, no. What did I do that for? What did I do? What did I... Tell me what to do now. I thought I was doing what I was supposed to do. I thought I'd find my way the way you did to the... To the heart of the things, to the heart of the world, I imagined myself safe there, in the hollow of... But I'm above nothing. I'm of the world, whatever that means, whatever God thinks of the world. I think he must think the same of me. Tell me what I do now.
Roy shrugs.
I'm a liar. I lied. I never told you how much you frightened me, Roy.
He walks toward Roy.
I've always seen, known what you are. And I'm not like that. Not like you. But I've lied. And lied, and lied.
Joe is facing Roy. He puts his head against Roy's chest, lost. Roy surprised, pleased, moved. He puts his arms around Joe, a tender, careful embrace. Joe raises his head, They look at one another.
Show me a little of what you've learned, baby Joe. Out in the world.
They kiss, intimate, uncertain, as affectionate as it is sexual.
Damn. I gotta shuffle off this mortal coil.
Looking up at the ceiling, warning the powers above.
I hope they have something for me to do in the great hereafter. I get bored easy. You'll find, my friend, that what you love will take you places you never dreamed you'd go.
Roy vanishes. Joe doesn't move, eyes closed. He opens them when Harper enters. They stare at one another.
Hope you didn't worry.
Harper? Were you?
A trip to the moon on gossamer wings.
What?
You ought to get your hearing checked. You say that a lot. I was out with a friend in paradise.
Scene 5. Heaven. In the council room of the Hall of the Continental Principalities. As the scene is being set, a voice proclaims,
"In the Hall of the Continental Principalities, Heaven, a city much like San Francisco, 6 of 7 myriad infinite aggregate angelic entities in attendance, may their glorious names be praised forever and ever. Hallelujah. Permanent Emergency Council is now in session."
Power for the Great Chamber is supplied by an unseen immense generator, the rhythmic pulsing as well as the occasional surges and wavers of which are visible in the unsteady lights and audible continuously underneath the scene until its cessation. At the center of the room is a very large round table covered with a heavy tapestry on which is woven a 17th century map of the world. The tabletop is covered with ancient and broken astronomical, astrological, mathematical, and nautical objects of measurement and calculation, cracked clay tablets, dulled styli, dried ink pots, split quill pens, disintegrating piles of parchment, and old derelict typewriters. On the table and all around the room are heaps and heaps and heaps of books, bundles of yellowing newspapers, and dusty, teetery stacks of neglected and abandoned files. On one side of the table, a single bulky radio, a 1940s model in very poor repair, is switched on, its dial and tubes glowing. The 6 present continental principalities are gathered about it, sitting and standing. The Angel of Asiatica is seated nearest to the radio. The Angel of Antarctica is farthest away. The principalities are dressed uniformly in elegant, flowing, severely black robes that look like what justices, judges, magistrates wear in court. All 6 sound very much alike, as if speaking with a single voice. Their speech is always careful, a little slow, and soft, like mild old people. In everything they say, there's a distinct tone of quiet, enduring desolation and perplexity. This tone doesn't vary. Even when they argue, they sound tentative, careful, broken. They're almost completely still, but as they listen, they turn slightly, slowly, looking to one another for comfort. Asiatica and Africani intermittently hold hands. The principalities are aghast, frightened, and grief-stricken at the news they're hearing on the radio, which they're not supposed to be using. They listen intently to the dim, crackly signal.
1 week following the explosion of the number 4 reactor, the fires are still burning, and an estimated releasing into the atmosphere 50 million curies of radioactive iodine, falling like toxic snow into the Dnipro River, which provides drinking water for 35 million. is a direct consequence of the lack of safety culture caused by Cold War isolation.
When?
April 26th, 3 months from today.
Where is this place, this reactor?
Chernobyl, in Ukraine. Belarus, near the border. Hundreds, thousands will die.
Horribly. Hundreds of thousands.
Millions.
The reception is too weak.
Can it be fixed?
It is beyond us.
I weep for the irremediable wastage of fossil fuels. Old blood of the globe spilled wantonly or burned and jettisoned into the crystal air.
Oh, if only he would return and explain to us.
The Angel of America ushers Pryor into the chamber. Terrified and determined, he stands before the council table. The principalities stare at Pryor.
Most august fellow principalities, angels most high, I regret my absence. I was detained.
Ah, this is...
The Prophet, yes.
Ah?
Exchanging brief, concerned glances with one another, the angels bow to Pryor.
I want to return this.
He holds out the book. No one takes it from him.
Well, what is the matter with it?
It just...
They wait, anxious to hear his explanation.
We can't just stop. We're not rocks. Progress, migration, motion is... It's what living things do. We desire, even if all we desire is stillness. It's still desire for... Even if we go faster than we should, we can't wait. And wait for what? For God? God? He isn't coming back. And even if he did, if he ever did come back, if he ever dared to show his face or his glyph or whatever in the garden again, if after all this destruction, if after all the terrible days of this terrible century, he returned to see how much suffering his abandonment had created, if all he has to offer is death, you should sue the bastard. Sue the bastard for walking out. How dare he? He ought to pay.
Thus spake the prophet.
So, thank you for sharing this with me, but I don't want to keep it.
He wants to live.
Yes. I'm 30 years old, for God's sake. I haven't done anything yet. I want to be healthy again. And this plague, it should stop in me and everywhere. Make it go away.
Oh, we have tried. We suffer with you, but we do not know how.
Pryor and Australia look at each other.
This is the tome of immobility, of respite, of cessation. Drink of its bitter water once, prophet, and never thirst again.
I can't.
Pryor puts the book on the table. He removes his prophet robes, revealing the hospital gown underneath. He places the robe by the book.
I still want my blessing. Even sick, I want to be alive.
You only think you do. Life is a habit with you. You have not seen what is to come. We have. What will the grim unfolding of these latter days bring that you or any being should wish to endure them? Death, more plenteous than all heaven has tears to mourn it. The slow dissolving of the great design. The spiraling apart
of the work of eternity, the world, and its beautiful particle logic all collapsed, all dead, forever, in starless, moonlorn onyx night.
The angel goes to Pryor.
We are failing. Failing the earth and the angels. Look up. Look up.
Pryor and the angel are looking up.
It is not to be time. Oh, who demands more life?
She returns to stand with the other principalities all facing Pryor.
Let any being on whom fortune smiles creep away to death before that last dreadful daybreak when all your ravaging returns to you with the rising, scorching, unrelenting sun, when morning blisters crimson and bears all life away, a tidal wave of protean fire that curls around the planet and bears the earth clean as bone.
But still, bless me anyway. I want more life. I can't help myself. I do. I have lived through such terrible times, and there are people who live through much, much worse, but you see them living anyway. When they're more spirit than body, when they're more sores than skin, when they're burned and in agony, they live. I don't know if it's not braver to die, but I recognize the habit, the addiction to being alive. We live past hope. If I can find hope anywhere, that's it. That's the best I can do. It's so much not enough. It's so inadequate, but bless me anyway. I want more life.
He turns away to leave. When his back is turned, the angels silently make mystical signs. Pryor stops, suddenly feeling sick again. Leg pain, constricted lungs, cloudy vision, febrile panic, and under that, dreadful weakness. He gathers his strength, then turns again, with a new calm, to face them.
You haven't seen what's to come. You've only seen what you're afraid is coming. Until it arrives, please don't be offended, but all you can see is fear. I'm leaving heaven to you now. I'll take my illness with me, and I'll take my death with me too. The earth's my home, and I want to go home.
Scene 6, 7 a.m. Pryor descends from heaven and slips into his hospital bed. Belize is sleeping in a chair.
Oh. Oh. I'm exhausted.
You've been working hard.
I feel terrible.
Welcome back to the world.
From where? Hi.
Emily enters.
Well, look at this. It's the dawn of man.
Venus rising from the sea.
I'm wet.
Fever broke. That's a good sign. They'll be in to change you in.
Mrs. Pitt, did she?
Elle fait sa toilette. Elle est très formidable, ça. Where did you find her?
We found each other. I've had a remarkable dream. And you were there.
Hannah enters.
Oh, and you!
I what?
And some of it was terrible, and some of it was wonderful. But all the same, I just kept saying, I want to go home. And they sent me home.
What are you talking about?
Oh, thank you.
I just slept in the chair.
She saved my life.
I did no such thing. I slept in the chair. Being in a hospital upsets me. It reminds me of things. I have to go home now. I had the most peculiar dream.
Lewis enters.
Can I come in?
Pryor looks at Lewis and then at Belize.
I have to start rounds. You're one of the lucky ones. I could give you a rose. You rest your weary bones.
What are you... What happened to you?
Visible scars that you said that I had...
Lewis, you're so goddamn literal about everything.
I'm going now.
You'll come back.
If I can. I have things to take care of.
Please do. I have always depended on the kindness of strangers.
Well, that's a stupid thing to do.
Who's she?
You really don't want to know.
Before I depart, a homecoming gift.
Belize puts his shoulder bag on Pryor's lap. Pryor opens it. It's full of bottles of pills.
What? I can't read the label. My eyes aren't any better. AZT. Where on earth did you... These are hot pills. I am shocked.
A contribution to the Get Well Fund. From a bad fairy.
These pills, they make you better.
They're poison. They make you anemic. This is my life from now on, Lewis. I'm not getting better. I'm not sure I'm ready to do that to my bone marrow.
We'll talk about it tomorrow. I'm going home to nurse my grudges. Ta, baby. You sleep all day. Ta, Lewis. You sure know how to clear a room.
Pryor. I want to come back to you.
Scene 7. Same morning. Split scene. Lewis and Pryor in Pryor's hospital room. Continuous from scene 6. Harper and Joe in Brooklyn. Joe sits in a chair. Harper enters from the bedroom, dressed for traveling, carrying a small suitcase.
I want the credit card. That's all. You can keep track of me from where the charges come from, if you want to keep track. I don't care.
I have some things to tell you.
Oh, we shouldn't talk. I don't want to do that anymore. Credit card.
I don't know what will happen to me without you. Only you. Only you love me, out of everyone in the world. I've done things. I'm ashamed. But I've changed. I don't know how yet. But please, please don't leave me now. Harper, you're my good heart.
She looks at him. She walks up to him and slaps him. Hard.
Did that hurt?
Joe nods yes.
Yes. Remember that, please. If I can get a job or something, I'll cut the card to pieces and there won't be charges anymore. Credit card.
Joe takes out his wallet, gives her the card.
Call or... call. You have to.
No. Probably never again. That's how bad. Sometimes maybe lost is best. Get lost, Joe. Go exploring.
Harper takes a bottle of Valium from a coat pocket. She shakes out two pills, goes to Joe, takes his hand, and puts the Valium in his open palm.
With a big glass of water.
Harper leaves.
I want to come back to you. You could respond. You know, you could say something. Throw me out or say, it's fine. I know it's not fine, but sure, what the hell, or... I really failed you, but I, oh God, this is hard. Failing in love isn't the same as not loving. It doesn't let you off the hook. It doesn't mean that you're free to not love.
I love you, Lewis.
Good. I love you.
I really do. But you can't come back. Not ever. I'm sorry, but you can't.
Scene 8. That night. Lewis and Pryor remain from the previous scene. Joe is sitting alone in Brooklyn. Harper appears. She is in a window seat on board a jumbo jet, airborne.
Night flight to San Francisco. Chase the moon across America. God, it's been years since I was on a plane. When we hit 35,000 feet, we'll have reached the tropopause, the great belt of calm air. As close as I'll ever get to the ozone. I dreamed we were there. The plane leapt the tropopause, the safe air, and attained the outer rim, the ozone, which was ragged and torn, patches of it threadbare as old cheesecloths, and that was frightening, but I saw something only I could see, because of my astonishing ability to see such things. Souls were rising from the earth far below. Souls of the dead, of people who had perished from famine, from war, from the plague. And they floated up, like skydivers in reverse, limbs all akimbo, wheeling and spinning. And the souls of these departed joined hands, clasped ankles, and formed a web, a great net of souls. And the souls were three-atom oxygen molecules of the stuff of ozone. And the outer rim absorbed them and was repaired. Nothing's lost forever. In this world, there is a kind of painful progress. Longing for what we've left behind. And dreaming ahead. At least I think that's so.
Epilogue. Bethesda, January 1990. Pryor, Lewis, Belize, and Hannah sitting on the rim of the Bethesda Fountain in Central Park. It's a bright day, but cold. Pryor is heavily bundled, and he has thick glasses on. He supports himself with a cane. Hannah is noticeably different. She looks like a New Yorker, and she's reading an issue of The Nation. Lewis and Belize are arguing. The Bethesda Angel is above them all.
The Berlin Wall has fallen. The Ceausescus are out. He is building democratic socialism. The new internationalism. Gorbachev is the greatest political thinker since Lenin.
I don't think we know enough yet to start canonizing him. The Russians hate his guts.
Yeah, but I... Remember back 4 years ago, the whole time we were feeling everything everywhere was stuck while I, in Russia, look, perestroika, the thaw, it's the end of the Cold War. The whole world is changing overnight.
I wonder what'll happen now in places like Yugoslavia.
Yugoslavia?
Let's just turn the volume down on this, okay? They'll be at it for hours. It's not that what they're saying isn't important, it's just... This is my favorite place in New York City. No, in the whole universe, the parts of it I have seen. On a day like today. A sunny winter's day. Warm and cold, all at once. And the sky's a little hazy, so the sunlight has a physical presence. A character. In autumn, those trees across the lake are yellow, and the sun strikes those most brilliantly against the blue of the sky, that sad fall blue. Those trees are more light than vegetation. They are Yankee trees, New England transplants. They're barren now. It's January 1990. I have been living with AIDS for 5 years. That's 6 whole months longer than I lived with Lewis.
Whatever comes, what you have to admire in Gorbachev, in the Russians, is that they are making a leap into the unknown. You can't wait around for a theory. The sprawl of life and its weird...
Interconnectedness.
Yes.
Maybe the sheer size of the terrain.
It's all too much to be encompassed by a single theory now.
The world is faster than the mind.
And that's what politics is, the world moving ahead, and only in politics does the miraculous occur.
But that's a theory.
You can't live in the world without an idea of the world, but it's living that makes the ideas. You can't wait for a theory, but you have to have a theory.
Go no. As my grandma would say.
This angel, she's my favorite angel. I like them best when they're statuary. They commemorate death, but they suggest a world without dying. They are made of the heaviest things on earth, stone and iron. They weigh tons, but they're winged. They are engines and instruments of flight. This is the angel Bethesda. Lewis will tell you her story.
She was this angel. She landed in the Temple Square in Jerusalem in the days of the Second Temple. Right in the middle of a working day, she descended, and just her foot touched earth, and where it did, a fountain shot up from the ground. And when the Romans destroyed the temple, the fountain of Bethesda ran dry.
And Belize will tell you about the nature of the fountain before its flowing stopped.
If anyone who is suffering, in the body or spirit, walked through the waters of the fountain of Bethesda, they'd be healed, washed clean of pain.
They know this because I've told them many times. Hannah here told it to me. She also told me this.
When the millennium comes.
Not the year 2000, but the capital M, millennium.
Right. The fountain of Bethesda will flow again. And I told him I would personally take him there to bathe. We will all bathe ourselves clean.
Not literally in Jerusalem. I mean, we don't want this to have sort of Zionist implications. But on the other hand, we do recognize the right of the state of Israel to exist.
But the West Bank should be the homeland for the Palestinians, and the Golan Heights should also...
Well, not both the West Bank and the Golan Heights. Look, I mean, no one supports Palestinian rights more than...
Oh, yeah, right, Lewis. Like, not even the Palestinians are more devoted than you.
I'm almost done. The fountain's not flowing now. They turn it off in the winter. Ice in the pipes. But in the summer, it's a sight to see. I want to be around to see it. I plan to be. I hope to be. This disease will be the end of many of us, but not nearly all. And the dead will be commemorated and will struggle on with the living. And we are not going away. We won't die secret deaths anymore. The world only spins forward. We will be citizens. The time has come. Bye now. You are fabulous creatures, each and every one. And I bless you. More life. The great work begins.
We hope you've enjoyed this production of Angels in America, a gay fantasia on national themes by Tony Kushner. Starring Andrew Garfield as Prior Walter, Nathan Lane as Roy M. Cohn, Susan Brown as Hannah Pitt, Denise Goff as Harper Pitt, Beth Malone as The Angel, James McCardle as Lewis Ironson, Lee Pace as Joseph Pitt, Nathan Stewart Jarrett as Belize. Additional parts were performed by members of the cast, with narration by Bobby Cannavale and Edie Falco, based on the National Theater production directed by Marianne Elliott, produced for Penguin Random House Audio by Tony Kushner, Karen Jakonski, and Dan Zitt, production coordinator Rachel Walker, sound design, editing, mixing, and mastering by Heather Scott and Ted Scott of 50 Nugget Wash Productions. Recorded at CDM Studios in New York, Strathmore Studios in London, and Gorble Sound in Glasgow. Music by Adrian Sutton. All rights administered by BMG Rights Management US LLC. Moon River by 101 Strings Orchestra, courtesy of San Juan Music Group. Written by Henry Mancini and Johnny Mercer, courtesy of Sony ATV Harmony. Lyrics from Wouldn't It Be Loverly from My Fair Lady are included by kind permission of the Alan J. Lerner Testamentary Trust. Angels in America, Part 1, Millennium Approaches. Text copyright 1992, 1993, 2013 by Tony Kushner. Angels in America, Part 2, Perestroika. Text copyright 1992, 1994, 1996, 2013 by Tony Kushner. Production copyright 2019, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.